Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, the 14th of May, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
Morning. And also with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
You know, I like that when you do that intro, you get the slight southern accent. I think it's funny.
I didn't realize. Now I'm all like thrown off. I'm like, what do I sound like? So the first topic we want to talk about today is Intel for a number of reasons. And the first of which is that Intel held an investor event and talked about the latest iteration of their roadmap for CPUs. And John, you wrote this up. You wrote up a link for us with this, right?
Yeah. Yeah. At Macworld, Jason Cross wrote an article about Intel's latest roadmap, sourcing a PC World article. It was much more extensive, but Jason Cross at Macworld put it into a Mac perspective. You know, recently I've been writing about Coffee Lake and Coffee Lake Refresh. These are what's in the new iMacs and the new MacBook Pros. But when I started looking at these articles, I started getting a headache because, as usual, Intel's roadmaps are confusing, extensive, complicated, and opaque, and you get a headache just trying to keep up. But so far as I can figure out, we've got Coffee Lake in the MacBook Pros. We've got Coffee Lake and Coffee Lake Refresh in the high-end iMacs that were just announced in March. We've got, I think, Ice Lake in the MacBook Air, Coffee Lake in the Mac Mini, and that's where Apple stands right now. And in parallel to that, I mean, these are all 14 nanometer chips except for the Ice Lake. So Intel has been having trouble getting to 10 nanometers. TSMC has been producing A series chips for Apple, 10 and now 7 nanometers, with not much of a problem. But Intel has had some difficulties. What I don't know is whether the A series chips have to worry about Spectre and Meltdown mitigation, which may be something that Intel has had to deal with and slowing them down a little bit. And there's also fabrication issues, the technology of the 10 nanometer process. This 10 nanometer refers to the size of the transistors, the size of the gates, the principal component size and the chip surface.
Okay, and why does it matter that that continues to get smaller?
Well, you get when it's smaller, you can put more transistors on a chip. It requires less power because it's a smaller chip. But then you start getting quantum effects where you get interactions between the traces. And so an electron could conceivably tunnel from one trace to another due to quantum effects and screw things up. So you have to be very careful.
So why do you want so many transistors on a chip? Does it make them faster?
It makes them capable of doing more extensive operations. More transistors means more power. You can do 4K at 60 hertz. You can do, you can do faster graphics. You get more transistors means more graphics power on onboard graphics.
Okay.
So these chips generally have, I don't know, something on the order of 5 to 10 billion transistors.
Okay. That's a lot.
So Intel announced a new generation of chips. Cannon Lake is out. It's an old nomenclature. It's it was a disaster. And so Intel decided to rename everything. And so you have Ice Lake, which is the first of the 10 nanometers, and that's supposed to ship in June.
Okay.
And the question is whether Apple will use it. What the timing is.
We've been asking that question about almost every iteration of Intel chips that we've heard about, right? Like every time they come out with something that's newer and faster, we start wondering, because it used to be that Intel chips, like when Intel came out with a new processor, then we knew not far behind it would be whatever Apple was was going to put that chip in, right? So, like, here's a new Intel processor.
I wouldn't
get new minis.
Far behind it, I would say agonizingly longer behind. The PC world always gets the chips first.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I mean, Apple's demands for quantity are smaller.
Mm-hmm.
You would think Intel would be able to accommodate them, but Apple takes its sweet time. For example, the Coffee Lake chip was used in the new iMacs in March.
Mm-hmm.
With the very high end using Coffee Lake Refresh, which is sort of like just a minor half generation bump above Coffee Lake. And
but I mean, when
9 months, why?
Well,
I mean, Whiskey Lake was already out.
I'm talking about when Intel had a product map that you could follow and when it made sense. And then so when we like that was sort of the harbinger of new Apple hardware was, well, Intel has a new chip. So now we know. That now that it's become a big enough thing that they've announced it publicly and we know that this is a thing that Intel is up to, now we know we're going to get new computers. And that window did get bigger over time. Obviously, like John, you were saying, it was 9 months for the last one, and it wasn't even for a new chip. It was for a nudge on an existing one, which still, and we talked about that. I will remind people, we did talk about that on an earlier episode of TDO, because we talked about Charlotte being in the market for a new computer. And how Brian was not jazzed, even though they had air quote refreshed the iMacs, was not excited about paying 2019 money for a 2017 machine. So I remember we had that conversation because it wasn't new and exciting. And if you were buying anything but like the highest end iMac, John, you might have to correct me on that one. If you were buying any of the other iterations, you weren't getting anything new in those because it was still the previous iteration of the chip, right?
Well, yeah. And the other issue is that there's architectural issues for Apple. You know, Apple is big on Thunderbolt.
Mm-hmm.
And the PC world, Hewlett Packard, I think, does support Thunderbolt in some machines, high-end machines. Thunderbolt's not as widely used in the PC world as it is in the Apple world. And so when Intel produces a very popular chip that gets a lot of jazz and a lot of notoriety, and you say, well, why isn't it in the Mac? You have to look at the spec sheet and figure out whether it presses all of Apple's buttons, all their architecture buttons.
Mm-hmm.
And Thunderbolt is one of those issues. So Apple may wait for another chip that comes along that is slightly different in architecture, meets Apple's needs, has the Thunderbolt support, has the Wi-Fi support that they want, has the built-in graphics support that they need. So Intel produces so many different chips that Apple has to pick the one that fits them best.
Right.
So do we know why Intel has had so much trouble reaching 10 nanometer? Because it sounds like this article says the nanometer processes aren't even standardized. It says Intel's 10 nanometer is closer to TSMC's 7 nanometer. So is it just like Intel doesn't
have equipment? I didn't understand that. Yeah. That's like saying that 10 equals 7 when values of 10 are small and the values of 7 are large.
Yeah.
I didn't quite understand that myself.
Okay.
It could depend on how you measure the number. For example, if you're going to benefit yourself, you're going to use the smallest structure. I mean, if the trace lines are smaller than the transistors, you might say, I've got a 7 nanometer chip in traces, but the 10 nanometers is really the transistor size, or something like that. So you kind of favor yourself by picking the smallest element. There's different ways to define the elements on the chip surface. I take it. I may have told you more than I know.
Well, that was related to my question, which was, I'm curious why Intel is having a hard time because others are not. So we know there are other people who are manufacturing 10 nanometer chips at scale, and even somebody who's got it down to 7. And yeah, like in the article, it's not clear, like, you know, what Intel is doing is much more like a 7 nanometer thing. Then why aren't they calling it that? You know, that kind of thing. So That was the part I was wondering about as far as
the actual layout of the architecture, the way the chip architecture is set up, the regions, the process, the functions, the units, the arithmetic units, the graphic units, the way they're laid out in the A series versus the Intel chip. Intel chip has a lot of legacy baggage, and it has to, like I said, it has to deal with the Spectre and the Meltdown accommodations, and so that's, those are just part of the problem. It could be that they have to produce at a larger scale too, and so they have to minimize their losses to a lower level. I mean, if you're only manufacturing at 10,000 chips, you know, 1% losses, only 100 chips, you can throw them away. But when you're producing millions and millions, you got to get your yield factor way up there so you don't have them. You don't have a drastic loss.
Right. Okay. Well, if we find out more about this, we will let you know. We are only a couple of weeks out from WWDC. Maybe we will find out more there, depending on what Apple has to tell us about new software. Maybe we'll get new hardware.
WWDC will be whether Apple's going to make the leap to A series and the Mac now, or make an announcement at WWDC about how it's happening soon, or whether we'll go another year on Intel. That's the big question.
Mm-hmm. So, John, where do you think it will come first if they're going to do this?
The Mac Pro. It's been in development the longest and would benefit greatly. And it's a specialty high-end machine that would be used by professionals in a manner that didn't maybe depend so much on Intel, whereas a MacBook Pro user who's accustomed to running Windows on his MacBook Pro will be fussy about having x86 support. And so until Apple works that out, I think we'll see it on the high-end machines, the most expensive machines, and it'll dribble down to the consumer Macs.
Okay. Interesting. Andrew, how about you? Where do you think the new Apple chip will start? Okay.
I think it'll be the Mac Pro, just for what John says. It's been in development for a while, and I think maybe that could even be one of the selling points of it.
Mm-hmm. See, and I think it would be the opposite. I think it would be the entry-level machine, because that's going to be the closest to the mobile experience, which is where the A-series chips come from. So putting it, like, making the leap to something a little bit more powerful than an iPad Pro would be an entry-level MacBook. So to me, it seems like that would be the smallest amount of leap, although I would rather it was, you know, the big flashy high-powered thing, so that the big flashy high-powered thing gets more attention again, like it should. And also it would be, you know, a little bit more evidence that Apple does in fact care about pro users, which is something that they've not done a great job of actually doing, and have done a much better job at communicating. They keep telling us they care, but we haven't seen a lot of evidence. And so this would be a really good way to have that evidence made manifest, as it were. So
I need to make a correction.
Okay.
A little while ago, I said that the 2018 MacBook Air is Ice Lake. It's not shipped yet. It's Amber Lake on the 2018 MacBook Air. Sorry.
Oh, correction. Okay. Amber Lake. Okay. Well, there's a lot of lakes. So I understand you getting them confused.
Yes.
Yeah. If there were any more lakes, we'd be in Minnesota, right? So the other thing. So first of all,
We need a Wobegon chip.
And does it come with a powder milk biscuit graphics processor, John? John and I are entertaining ourselves right now, so tune in later for our public radio broadcast. I want to find out from you where you think, dear listener, that this new CPU is going to make its debut. You can do so by emailing observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us at TDO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. Our other topic today is an interesting thing about, is an interesting idea, which is a debate about push notifications. And it's not so much a debate about having them or not, as much as it is which ones should you actually be allowing all the way through to the lock screen of your phone or to your watch or anything like that. Andrew, you wrote about this.
Yeah, I thought this was a good article by Gizmodo. We've been talking about this for a while, trying to take back our attention so our phones aren't demanding so much of it. Mm-hmm. Now, trying to figure out which notifications you want is a bit subjective, but this article recommends some good places to start. Mm-hmm. So you're obviously going to want to have calls from your family go through. Mm-hmm. You'll want to get notifications for severe weather warnings, breaking news stories, emails from your boss or other important coworkers, and then security alerts if you use any home devices. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a good place to start.
Yeah, and I think one thing that I don't remember seeing in the article was that this is a thing that should be reviewed occasionally as well, because it's really easy to install a new app here and there once in a while, just tell it okay, and eventually you end up just with a steady stream of notifications all day long, and then, you know, you sort of have to walk through the notification screen and like dial some of that down and figure out like which things, because it's real easy to tap okay, like whatever it is, it's fine, okay, agree, sync my contacts, you know, whatever it is. Like, I installed this for something and I want to get to the something that I'm trying to do with this particular app. So I'm just going to tap okay on everything because I want to get there and do whatever it is I'm doing. Right. So it's,
I mean,
it's very easy to lose sight of that.
Yeah. For my personal use, I not only turn a lot of notifications off, but I don't even like seeing those badges. Mm-hmm. I have a badge when I get new emails and in Twitter, mm-hmm. but maybe like a couple more apps, but that's it.
Yeah, I have very few badges for the same reason. And the other thing to point out is that there are even levels of notification. So when you look at the alerts that you can get from an app, there's three of them. There's stuff that shows up on the lock screen, and then you can have it show up in Notification Center, and you can have it show up as a banner that slides down from the top of the screen, and mm-hmm. you can have the banner come down from the top of the screen and then go away after a little bit, or you can have it stay there till it gets swiped away. You have to take action in order to make it disappear. And some apps have sounds, so it can notify you, you know, in an audio way as well as just when you pick up your phone. So there's a number of ways that you can adjust your notifications to do something else. One thing that I personally have a complaint about is that a lot of apps will let you have an audio notification, some sort of tone that goes off, but they won't let you customize that at all.
Yeah.
So there are, you know, so at that point, like whenever I get a chance to customize the sound that it will make, I customize the sound that it will make. That way I know what it is that wants my attention. And then I can tell whether or not it's something I need to look at this minute or it can wait or whatever. And that's a thing that I find frustrating is if it goes doo-loo, I'm like, what was that? Like something that wants my attention, but it could be one of these bunch of different things, some of which are way more important than others.
You know, for all
that's just a generic one.
Yeah.
For all the talk about AI, this is a perfect application of AI.
Yes.
I keep thinking about Knowledge Navigator, where the guy's working away and the Knowledge Navigator pops up and says, your mom's trying to get through to you. You know, this is an important phone call. The AI knows it. He knows what you're doing, knows when you need to know it. He knows what your environment is. He knows what you're working on. He knows what notifications are important at that moment because of their nature. Mm-hmm. That's perfect for AI. Mm-hmm. Why should we have to sit there and pull sliders and lock things down and fiddle with our notifications?
Well, I think part of that is I actually don't mind the option, but what I would like is if default were maybe a little different. Like maybe the default is lock screen, but no badge and no sound. And if you want it to give if you want to give it more attention, you can move it sort of up the priority list by having it do something else. So if you're an app developer, please let me put my own sound on it, or better yet, have your own sounds. And then I know when your app makes noise at me that it's your app. And that's good.
And make them like nice, relaxing, calming sounds. So when we do have our iPhone make a ding, it won't like make us anxious.
Yeah, it's not irritating. Right. And the other thing that I would point out is that this would be a really exciting thing for Phil Schiller to get to walk around on stage and tell us about with machine learning. Because we know how he loves to talk about machine learning. Wouldn't it be great if this were a thing where, like, you know, a text message from your spouse, for example, always makes a noise, but you don't have to go in and mute everything else individually if there's other people that you don't want to hear from. And it just knows, right?
You know, movies do a better job of user interface sometimes than developers. I can't tell you how many movies I've seen where somebody has a very gentle, beautiful, lyrical tone on their phone. I'm going, oh, I want that. I want that sound.
Yeah.
And then a developer says, well, no, I have to get this guy's attention. Oh, God.
Yes.
You don't see that on movies because they just don't do that. I mean, they want to be, artistic.
Yeah. So you never see somebody napping on the couch and an Amber Alert goes off and, you know, scares them.
Yeah.
You know, scares them onto the floor, jumps off the couch. I like that Amber Alerts have that sort of attention. Although I have heard from more than one person who works in an office where everybody just sort of sets their phone on their desk, that when the Amber Alert starts, because they don't roll them out to everyone all at exactly the same time, like all the rest of the day.
Oh, boy.
Like people just start hearing that tone. And yes, it's important, but it would really be nice if there were some sort of proximity thing where like everybody's could go off at once and that would be the end of it. Otherwise, that would be really frustrating. But yeah, the generic, anyone who works in an office is probably really tired of whatever the standard issue alert tones are, regardless of phone platform. Like everybody probably knows what the generic Android sound is and everybody knows what the iPhone sound is. And it would really be nice if those could be different. So please, app developers, do that for us. We'd really appreciate it. And like I said, this is a thing that should be revisited. Like one of the things that's important. This isn't one of those, I've done it once and now I never, ever have to do it again, ever. Like, that's not generally how notifications work, because generally people are adding and removing apps regularly and you kind of want to go back through and make sure, you know. And one easy way to do that is that if you get a notification on iOS, you can swipe it to the left and you get three options of manage, view, and clear. And you can go to manage and go, you know, I don't want this to give me so many alerts, or I want the alerts, but I don't want the sound or anything like that. And you can adjust those preferences accordingly. And it's good to do that once in a while.
Yeah, I love that option.
Yeah, I think it's iOS 12, I think, is what gave us that. It seems very, very recent. And it's really great. I've enjoyed it because I've had stuff that I didn't realize I had given permission to notify me that I don't want to notify me. And it makes it a piece of cake to get those turned off.
Like some random game.
Yeah.
Like begging you to come back and play.
Yeah. We miss you. Okay, first of all, no. And second of all, like you don't get to send me notifications about that. And it's nice to be able to streamline that process of just adjusting those. So you can even do that, you know, just pay attention for a week, right? And you know, do I need this notification? And if you don't, just swipe it left and you'll get the option to adjust things accordingly. Super duper handy. So I enjoy that one as well. If you have tips about notifications, you can always feel free to get in touch with us. We would like to hear from you. And perhaps your feedback is something we will incorporate into a future show. Until then, I'd like to thank both of you for being here today. Andrew, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Speaking of notifications, John, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
And I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.